Well, thank you very, very much indeed for inviting me here. It's a great, great joy to be here. It's a great honour to be sharing a platform with one of the most respected leaders in our country. It's not only an honour, but it's actually very useful, because I'm expecting His Eminence to answer all your difficult questions after me. I want to start by paying a tribute to all of those who have organised this conference. And not only this conference, but what they do day in, day out with Catholics in healthcare. And I know it's a small, but it is a growing organisation. But in fact, I think it should be a huge organisation. When you think of our history, our noble and compassionate history in caring for the sick and the infirm, and when you think of the number of Catholics who continue that tradition in our modern world, and I just sort of think, why are we so bashful as being Catholics? Why don't we act with boldness? Why don't we proclaim our allegiance from the rooftops? And I'm afraid that just too few of us do, and I think that's a pity, because I think we should be really proud of our faith. And at the very least, we should join Catholics in healthcare. So I hope at the end of this conference, people will. Anyhow, one of the things that impressed me about the organisation was when I went to the NHS Confederation's annual conference. And this is a huge event, and it was held in Manchester in the centre. And it was only Catholics that had the stand proclaiming their faith. And what was interesting was the number of people who came up, quite shy, quite diffident, wanting to find out more. And that's real outreach, and I think that's what we should be about. Now, I'm going to start with a bit of personal stuff. My father and my mother were practicing Catholics. And my father joined the NHS in 1948, when the National Health Service was formed. My father was one of those controlling GPs. I don't suppose there are many left now, but in those days there were a lot. And my father decided that my brother was going to be a doctor and I was going to be a nurse. And he is, and I'm not. But anyhow, he decided on early conditioning. So at the age of 6, he gave me this nurse's uniform to wear. And I was so proud of it. And I had this white apron with a red cross, and a hat with the red cross. And one day, there was a knock on the back door. And it was our elderly neighbour, and he was doubled up with abdominal pain. And seeing my father's car in the garage, he said, Julia, is your father in? And I thought, this is my moment. And so my parents had just come back from India, and they had brought with them a Mahjong set. And in the Mahjong set were these very large ivory counters. So I took an ivory counter, and I took a glass of water, and I went to the back door, and the miracle was not that he only swallowed it, but he made an immediate recovery. And so I thought, nurse prescribing, now this is effective. Well, at 17 I married a farmer, and I have to say it was the best decision of my life. But I was stuck at home, and I was very bored, and I had 2 small children. And then I learnt that the village that I loved and I still lived in, my father was the doctor, was under threat. And developers were going to double its size with no regard for our legacy, just their bottom line. And I thought, I'm not having this. So at 22, I stood for the local council and I entered the world of politics for the first time. And we fought the developers. They threatened to sue me for libel for the things I said and were reported in the local paper. They demanded an apology. I refused. They went bankrupt 2 months later, proving my prediction. New developers, new plans drawn up to meet our needs. And the change has been really beneficial. It's a wonderful place to live, and I'm very pleased that I was part of that change. Now, sitting on the council and chairing the planning committee, I discovered that politics are great stuff, you can really influence not only the present, but the future. And I became seriously addicted. I got elected to not only the district, but the parish and the county councils. And because I chaired the Social Services Committee, I was appointed to chair the Brighton Health Authority. When in Brighton, I was asked by the government to chair a review of community nursing. And our report, Neighbourhood Nursing, among other things, recommended that nurses should be allowed to prescribe a range of medicines and to practice in their own right as nurse practitioners. Because I was later appointed to the House of Lords, I was able to take that report through Parliament, first as a backbencher and later as a minister. But it took 16 years to get 8 pilot schemes going and 20 years to get full implementation across the whole country and across the whole formulary. So politics is about change, hopefully change for the better. This week, we've heard a lot about change with Lord Darzi's review of the NHS. High quality care for all, coupled with a high quality workforce and a consultation on the NHS constitution. Now, I'm afraid I haven't had a chance to read those, but I've had a quick glimpse, and I think they're really rather good. But I think just like nurse prescribing, it's actually the implementation that's going to be the real challenge. Now, Lord Darzi is interesting. When he was appointed a minister, he declared he was not a politician, but a doctor. Now, I don't agree with that. You can't be a minister of the Crown, answerable to Parliament, and not be a politician. But I can understand his reluctance to be labelled a politician when he can be labelled a member of one of the country's most loved professions. Doctors are loved. Politicians aren't. Politicians disappoint. Electors and constituents believe governments can solve everything, from street parking to global warming. Politicians have to deal with conflicting pressures. And if marginally successful, the electorate are not grateful, but go on to the next problem to be solved. Expectations move on, and the wealthier we get, the more we want. The more we know, the more dissatisfied we become. Appetites are insatiable. It's not a phenomenon unknown to health workers, who have to resist demands and yet maintain their professionalism. As Sir Cyril Chancellor told us yesterday evening, 3 years ago I chaired a working party for the Royal College of Physicians to study professionalism. What does it mean? Do we care about it? Does it matter? Does it even exist? Well, we sat down and it was very difficult, but I had a really superb team. And our scribe was Richard Horton, who's the editor of The Lancet, so I knew whatever we came out with, it'd be well written. But we were thinking about Voltaire. If you are to discourse with me, define your terms. So the first thing we had to do was define professionalism, medical professionalism. And we went to the Oxford English Dictionary and we looked through the definition because we thought a lot of people have thought about professionalism before we came on the scene. So we had huge discussions about words like altruism, humility, mastery. We built in words about patience, about partnership, about all those things. And we defined a really, really good definition, but it was long like that. And I said to the team, that's no good. If Jeremy Paxman says to me on Newsnight, well, Lady Cumberledge, what do you mean by medical professionalism? Well, I can't remember that great thing. So I said, we need a sentence. And if you think of strap lines, Bill Gates, Microsoft, a computer on every desk, that's what he aimed for. Well, we weren't quite as succinct as that, but we did come out with a sentence. And our sentence is, medical professionalism is signified by the values, the behaviours, and the relationships which underpin the trust the public has in doctors.